Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Asher Kaufman, a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University, Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace and headed its Middle East unit in 2004 to 2005. Kaufman is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, A History of Modern Lebanese National Identity, and his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. Welcome to Background Briefing, Asher Kaufman.
Thank you very much for having me.
And your forthcoming book couldn't be more up to the moment. This is the very area that's in contention, and Austrian peacekeepers were wounded on the Golan Heights border crossing, and this has led Austria to withdraw its peacekeepers. The Israeli government aren't happy about this because they want some stability on this border. Are Israel's concerned that there'll be more attacks on this border, you think, justified?
I think the government of Israel is right to be concerned that the border, the Golan Heights border that has been so quiet for so many years, is now changing its atmosphere. And Israel is slowly but surely being drawn into the civil war. I would say it's almost inevitable, unfortunately. And the departure of the Austrian peacekeeping forces is just another indication that this is what is happening. The disengagement agreement from 1973 is basically disintegrating in front of our eyes.
Well, of course, Israel has already intervened a number of times in the Syrian civil war in bombing convoys of alleged transfer of missiles by Hezbollah. They did also bomb an area around the foot of Mount Kaisun, where the presidential palace is, and
right.
struck some
yeah.
Republican Guard positions
yeah.
and
yeah.
the airport. So it would seem to me that Assad, who hasn't retaliated against the Israelis, and would love to be able to tie the rebels to Israel, which he's always tried to do. So is he trying to cause mischief on that border in order to provoke the Israelis?
I mean, this particular incident was not his own initiative. These were rebel forces that tried to take over the cross border, the crossing point over there, and they failed. But I think Assad, as well as Hezbollah, they work on a sort of a tight rope. On the one hand, it is very clear that they would like to frame this civil war as a war against, from one side, the resistance, which they represent, and the pro-Israeli, pro-American forces, which seemingly the other side represents. On the other hand, they do not want to have Israeli military force forcefully intervene in this civil war, because I think that could put into major jeopardy Assad's military capabilities of, in this civil war. So I think it's a very, very tricky game from Syria's side and from Hezbollah's side to frame this civil war as a war of resistance against Israel, but at the same time, to be concerned that Israel's intervention could tip the balance against the Assad forces.
And, of course, we have Senator McCain here in the United States calling for the U.S. to intervene. And I take it the Israeli Air Force could probably quickly destroy the Syrian Air Force. And the missiles that Russia is threatening to put in there, the ground-to-air S-300 missiles, are apparently designed to shoot down aircraft. And I think Putin, when he said that they were sending them, although they haven't sent them yet, said that he was doing this to deter hotheads, which I presume Putin was referring to Israel there.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that that would deter Israel. I think what might happen, and Israel has already indicated that, is what the government would pursue, that should the missiles arrive in Syria, Israel would preemptively strike and disable them. And that, I think, is relatively easy for Israel to do on the military level. The question is, of course, what would happen a second later, because Hezbollah on its turn has already said that should that happen, then all hell would break loose and they would see Israel as fully engaged in the war and see Israel as a target. So it's very, very risky, very tricky, and government of Israel, as you indicated yourself. This one and in previous years, previous governments, they have had the tendency to, when they saw fit, to intervene in Syria's affairs militaristically, and that may indeed happen again, and we honestly don't know what would happen the second after. We know that the military intervention itself, the Israeli Air Force, is by far superior to any challenge that Syria could pose to it, but the second after the airstrike, what would happen, that's very open and extremely dangerous. Because if Israel becomes, overtly, actively involved in this war, then we would need witness a new level of violence of this war that we have not seen yet. And it's hard to think about this war in these terms, because we think we have already seen everything that could be seen. But I think if Israel joins in with its own military capabilities, that would be a new ballgame.
Again, I'm speaking with Asher Kaufman, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University, Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace. He headed its Middle East unit from 2004 to 2005 and is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, A History of Modern Lebanese National Identity. And his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel tri-border region. So there's a couple of questions vis-a-vis Hezbollah's overt intervention in essentially being the boots on the ground for the Syrian army in taking back this key strategic town that the Syrian government now is, crowing on state TV about their victory. But a lot of analysts say now, and in fact the Free Syrian Army have made these threats, they're saying now that Hezbollah is vulnerable to attacks within Lebanon. Is that likely to happen, do you think?
I think so. I mean, it's difficult to predict what would happen, obviously, but, things are getting out of control. It's very clear. And the opposition forces in Syria are not a centralized entity that can be governed from the top. These are loose organizations that have different agendas. They cannot be controlled. And it's very easy to one or two or three of them to have their own agenda and start, extending the front against Hezbollah, not only to Syria, but also back home to in Lebanon. It has already happened in small scale, and that could be definitely extended. And Lebanon could see another stage of its involvement in the civil war in Syria. That very well could happen, and I'm sure that Hezbollah has factored it into its own decisions to be so open about its involvement in this civil war.
Well, a lot of the defeated soldiers of the Free Syrian Army retreating from Qusair were saying that they will take revenge against Hezbollah, even if it takes them 100 years.
Yes. I mean, these are statements of soldiers that have just been defeated. But I think if you look at the civil war in a broader perspective, or look at civil wars in general, you don't have to go that far. You only need to go to the Lebanese civil war. There were ups and downs of this civil war, and every other year or every once in a while, there was one side who was sure that he was going to have the upper hand and would able to shape the new Lebanon that would be created, that would be established after the civil war. It took so many years. It took 15 years before the war was over. I think this is what we are seeing now in Syria. At this moment, Hezbollah and Assad, they feel that they have the upper hand. That could very easily shift to the other side. That's the civil war is not over. It's not going to be over anytime soon. And this victory is a tactical victory. It may well change. Maybe in the not in the near future, but in the future. As far as I can tell, we are witnessing a page in this history, in this violent history of this civil war, not the final chapter.
Well, it would seem that there is a great disparity between the backers of Assad and the backers of the rebels, that the Russians are determined to keep Assad in power, to transfer arms to him and to hold on to their naval base. Iran is prepared both financially and military to double down and do what's necessary, which they're doing. And Hezbollah has now entered the fight literally as boots on the ground for what's left of the Syrian army, and clearly it's made a difference. On the other side, there's been a great deal of ambivalence from the United States and from the European Union about who these rebels are and who do you support amongst them and who speaks for them. But the one thing that one assumes it concerns the White House is this becoming a regional war. And what you're telling us and what appears to be happening on the ground is that it's already becoming a regional war, spreading beyond Syria's borders.
Yeah, there is no question about it. I mean, it has regional dimensions in two levels. The one level is that Syria, the civil war itself has become a proxy war between Iran, Saudi Arabia, and other Gulf states. They arm, they finance the two opposite sides, exactly as the civil war in Lebanon was, by the way. And the other regional dimension is the cross-border leakage or spillage, if you want. Events in Lebanon itself, Lebanon is drawn into this war day by day. I think Israel is going that direction. Maybe not in the same level of intensity as Lebanon does, but definitely you see that phenomena. Iraq is already torn even before the civil war and in Syria. And the civil war in Syria has only exacerbated the sectarian tension there. So you have the regional dimensions on both levels. The regional countries in the region that are affected by the war, and the war itself that serves as a battleground for the regional powers, Iran on the one hand and Saudi Arabia and its allies on the other hand.
But it would seem that we've mentioned that Israel's already entered the war, and it would seem that the U.S. is perhaps preparing to enter in some form through what it's doing in Jordan. There are military exercises now going on with Jordan. A number of F-16 planes have been deployed to Jordan for the Jordanian Air Force. The U.S. is supplying them, and they're doing joint exercises. And it would seem that that is at least an indication that there's a possibility that the U.S. could intervene militarily. And my understanding is, and I'm sure this is happening amongst Israeli military planners, that with Hezbollah exposed with about a third of its forces inside Syria, and one third, I think, is in the area that Israel bombed in the 2006 war, and then the other third is right on the southern Lebanese border facing Israel, that there would be a temptation for the Israelis to strike through the Golan Heights and isolate or cut through. And aren't there a lot of Israeli generals who feel that the 2006 war never ended and it's about time that they brought it to a close, since it clearly ended on a... It certainly didn't end on a victory for Israel.
Yeah, I mean, the 2006 war ended with a bitter taste for Israel, and I'm sure many generals see it as an, there's still an open account between Israel and Hezbollah. I want to hope that, there are some carefully minded politicians in Israel that believe that Israel intervention in this war could only be counterproductive to Israel. That's my own hope. I cannot speak on behalf of Israeli military or government, obviously, but the way I see that an Israeli intervention in this war, even if it uses the opportunity to strike Hezbollah and seemingly once and for all devastate the organization, I think that even if that thought is there, it would be eventually counterproductive for Israel, because involvement in this war, it's so messy that you simply can never know. You may know how you enter, you have no idea how it would devolve after you go in. And I don't think that you can terminate the problem of Hezbollah by using now its weakness. what may happen if that scenario takes place. What may happen is that a greater involvement of Iran in this war, and you would get into a real regional conflict that involves that could involve Israel and Iran in a scale that we have not really seen yet. Now, that scenario could be actually coveted by some, you know, military thinkers, army thinkers in Israel. I don't know, but from my perspective, this would be devastating.
Well, already the fact that the Syrian army itself went into the demilitarized zone on the Golan Heights and Israel's protesting, they didn't get into a shooting match with the Syrian tanks. And as you pointed out, the Austrian peacekeepers were most likely shot by Syrian rebels, and that the Syrian army came in to rout the rebels on the border. But the fact that they crossed into the DMZ, which they haven't done since 1967, has definitely got the Israelis worried, hasn't it?
Yes. I mean, but do you know the disengagement agreement is gone? Mm. I mean, it's nothing but a piece of paper. It doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. To have an effective disengagement agreement, there has to be effective governments that can follow the letter of the agreement. That should be the UN should have an effective role there. But that is already gone. There is no central government in Syria, and this is what we are seeing at the border zone, that should the Assad government or should the Assad regime decide to do something in Syria, in the Golan Heights, provoking Israel, nothing would be there to stop it. And Israel may have protested to the UN about violating the disengagement agreement, but you know, this is a diplomatic ritual, not much more than that, because mm-hmm. in Jerusalem everybody knows that that's it. There is no central government in Damascus and centralized government, and the disengagement agreement is a dead letter.
So just in closing, Asher Kaufman, our discussion indicates that things are really on a hair trigger there, and it could just get so much worse quickly and spread into, it's already spreading into Lebanon, it's already spread into Iraq, it could spread into Jordan and even Turkey, as Assad has vowed to take back some of that area in the north that he's lost. You know, we know that the Russians and the Americans are trying to put together this peace talk in Geneva, and Lavrov and Kerry, the foreign ministers, apparently have a good personal relationship, but clearly there are some major differences between the US's views and Russia's views. But given one that you talked earlier, but that the Israelis would, if the Russians put those S-300 missiles in, the Israelis would take them out. They must know that, and that's probably why they haven't delivered them. So Putin must know that this is a real powder keg, and Kerry must know that this is a real powder keg. So what kind of responsible statesmanship is at play here? Are these people really going to get together and try and do something, or are they still going to keep posturing back and forth?
That's the question of the day, or the greater question of how do you put an end, or begin to think about putting an end to stopping the violence. And we are not there. We're not in that stage in this violence. I mean, the big problem is that both parties still think that they can win this war. They have not reached a level of exhaustion that they are ready to sit around one table and make some compromises. And this is where we are now. And I mean, historically, when you look at civil wars and peace agreements that ended these civil wars, they did not terminate with this bombastic conference sponsored by two powers. It started on a very low-key, local communication between rivaling parties, and then maybe later on, the greater regional or international powers intervene, but it does not start. It has not started. It has not been successful for civil wars to be terminated in the way that the Geneva conference was designed. So we are in the first stage, and all civil wars start, or all attempts to terminate civil wars start in one in that first stage, and I think we are there. But it would take many more tries and attempts before we can actually speak about an effective communication between the parties.
Well, Asher Kaufman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Asher Kaufman, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University, Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace and headed its Middle East unit from 2004 to 2005. Kaufman is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, A History of Modern Lebanese National Identity, and his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and Conflict at the Syria-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about Mr. and Mrs. Putin's divorce.